landing of eight losses or five hurdle flock are very open and open each all and basically, I don't think of the worst in a tally. We've done as a good job as we do. I'm proud of Jihad has made an extraordinary contribution to our coverage here. I couldn't have done it without him. He's standing by now. He lives in Las Vegas. Many of you are well familiar with Gary at this point. There are brand new developments in this case that warrant updating you because, again, next to 9/11, this is a big one. This is probably the biggest event since 9/11, hands down, because we feel there were elements involved with this extremely well-planned military-style ambush and annihilation of people that goes way to the top and beyond. And it's not as simple to figure out as who pulled off 9/11. We say inside job. The indications are that there were other issues involved with this. We'll get to that later in the hour. Gary, welcome back.
Good evening, Jeff. How's it going tonight?
Pretty damn crazy. And every time I see one of these stories, and I don't see many of them, fortunately, I just don't look. I can't stand it. That claim nobody died and the crisis actors. I guess I have to feel pity for the people who are promoting that outrageous disinformation. They're getting paid to do it in many cases. They intellectually can't believe it. That's just not possible. It just doesn't work. That didn't work. All right. Now, did you see the story?
I pity the people more believing the story.
Well, that too.
Believing that type of nonsense, yeah. Which is, I can understand the ones peddling it. You know, they might have some financial interest or whatever. You know, some type of employment type position. They're insane, whatever their problem is. It's the people that actually believe it who are just lazy. And all they have to do is their own research. And to see for themselves instead of just, you know, they get fed, spoon-fed something, and that's where they leave it. How many times, Jeff, have you challenged people? I challenge people every day. You know, whoever's listening to me, I challenge them to do their own research and verify what I'm saying. I mean, I more than welcome anybody to verify everything I have to say and, you know, compare my notes and what I say and what you are saying compared to what they're saying.
Right.
Put the side by side and say what makes sense and what is completely sounds where you would just basically would be thinking someone's from a mental home or something that would be saying it. So just don't do that and just use a little common sense and just stop to think, you know, once in a while, hey, you know, sometimes stories, you know, tend to get a little bit crazy, but when they go so far out in left field, and they get so far out and way out in the galaxy, you got to bring yourself back a little bit and say, you know what? I'm going to look into all aspects of this story.
One part of this
story goes everywhere.
It does go everywhere. It goes in directions we haven't even thought about yet, I'm afraid. The idea that the town, the city can be locked down. People dispute that. Wrong. All the people who work in the casino industry, first of all, they want their jobs. But secondly, they want the town to survive and thrive and recover. It's never recovered since 2009. So they've got a lot at stake here. All the people who work in the hospitals, believe me, they have been told by federal authorities, whether it be DHS or FBI or Metro, you talk to the media about any of this, and we'll bring you up on charges of national security issues and other issues, and you'll end up spending a long time in prison. No one's going to do that. Now they talk amongst themselves. You've got sources. I've got some people have told me things. And the horror that went on in the key hospitals with the trauma centers was just indescribable. And I still believe, and I think you do too, I don't want to speak for you, but I think a lot more than 58 people died in this. I think they're keeping a lid on it.
I do too. I think there's above 150 to 200, even maybe even possibly above 200. You know, I talked to a former, you know, I don't want to give too much information. He's a former law enforcement that was here in Nevada, retired. He has a running theory, which makes a lot of sense to me. He goes, when in the next couple of months, he said, you're going to see an uptick in missing person reports. I said, well, what does that mean? He said, well, they open files on people who have missing persons. He said, so what they will do to basically thin out or dilute the amount of people who passed away and who are killed during this, he said they'll put them as missing people. And they just leave them as missing persons, and they'll be in an infinite file to a cold. Basically, they go into a cold case file, and they get listed as missing persons. And, you know, I it's a theory. I'm not saying he's coming from a base of knowledge of being a former lawyer, and he's retired, as a matter of fact. And his theory makes a lot of sense to me. I mean,
I agree. And all right, let's, what I want to do is, all right, how am I going to do this? I'm going to hold the goodie for later. Not only will people who died turn up as missing, but a lot of them are I think, going to have their families paid off. $1 million, $2 million.
Sure.
You've lost your loved one. We're grieving with you. We cannot have any more damage done to Las Vegas. We need this to be kept to your family, and we're willing to help you for the rest of your lives. And a lot of people are going to do that. If it comes to that, they will. And I can understand it. I'm not saying it is happening. I'm speculating, but I'm trying to be logical. I'm trying to use linear, progressive, logical thought to deal with this situation. And if there were 150 people dead, they've got about 90 that they have to make go away. It's doable. Believe me, it's doable. You pay people off. They sign a non-disclosure. They're going to live by it, or they'll have a penalty to pay, and they're not going to do that. So it's quite doable. Now, let's go back. And NBC News just picked this up 4 hours ago. We reported it to you 4 days ago, that a couple who has a part-time residence in Henderson, which is Las Vegas, went home to Southern California, Riverside County, and they were driving home, and they're driving. And I want you to think about this, a 2010 Mercedes sedan. That's a tank, all right? Safest car on the road. Incredible electronics in the car, side airbags, front airbags, you name it. The fuel tanks are protected like you wouldn't believe in these cars. Well, this couple, the Carvers, I think Daniel and Lorraine, driving home less than a half mile from their house. That's like 800 yards from their house in a residential neighborhood. Allegedly, at 10:20 at night, drove off the road, a road they've been driving probably for many, many years. Their two daughters were at home, and they went into a metal pole, one of those little round poles that has a keypad on top of it, to open a gate to go into a private residence. And on each side of that metal pole were two little brick pillars, ornamental. Well, the car allegedly, according to CHP, ran into those pillars and that little round metal pole, probably 4 inches in diameter, and burst into flames at maybe, what, 35, 40 miles an hour at the most? They're driving home. The daughter, the 16-year-old daughter, heard it, ran out of the house, ran up and looked around the corner and saw her parents' car fully involved. Now, firefighters got there, and according to the story, and it's right there to be read in the Review Journal, as a matter of fact. But on the night of October 16th, the couple's younger daughter, 16-year-old Madison Carver, heard a loud bang outside her window. When she ran down the street and rounded a corner, a familiar vehicle engulfed in flames came into view. Dennis, her father, and Lorraine, her mother, had died together less than a half a mile from their house. According to Riverside County Fire Department, their vehicle, a 2010 Mercedes-Benz sedan, crashed into a metal gate outside their community, it's a gated community, at 10:50 p.m. in the 2000 block of blah, blah. Here's the key sentence. It took firefighters nearly an hour to completely extinguish the blaze in the car, the department said in a statement. All right, let's rewind back to reporter Danny Hastings. Michael Hastings, in Southern California. Okay, what happened to him, Gary?
Well, he, if you remember right, he was going, they had a film of him going through the intersection. The car exploded literally before it had hit that tree. Because LAPD kept claiming that it was the tree that caused the actual fire of the car.
Correct.
That wasn't true, because there's video online, that, and I'm sure they've scrubbed it by now, but there's still video you can find on YouTube, where he went through the intersection there on Wilshire Boulevard. I think it was on Wilshire Boulevard. It was in the Westwood District. And went through the red light, going, hauling through, going about 90 miles an hour. Car actually went up in flames and then rolled into the intersection, into the medium right there where that palm tree was. And it caught the palm tree on fire, as a matter of fact.
Right.
See, and he, by the way, was in a Mercedes-Benz too. And,
yeah,
you know, they basically, after a certain year, them computers are hackable. As a matter of fact, the onboard computers on a car have been proven to be hackable already. And if you want to notice something, the people that just passed away, who got killed, who were at the Las Vegas
shooting
scene,
yeah,
the Carvers, they're trying to make us believe that a little cement pillars that are basically protect the keypad to a gated community. Now, these pillars are just maybe like 2 feet into the ground. They're basically, if you bump into them, they literally will bend and fall down. Okay? They're trying to say that at 35 miles an hour, that car went into these little cement barriers that are basically protecting, you know, the keypad, and blew the car up literally. And literally, it burnt so hot that it couldn't put the fire out for an hour and a half. Now, the only thing that would be doing something like that type of fire would be a thermite fire, because thermite is almost impossible to put out. Matter of fact, thermite, which is basically metal burning, it will even burn underwater.
They call it an accelerant, something that makes a fire burn far hotter than it normally ever would.
And it burns all evidence away. If you remember,
yeah,
what other incident happened years back where there was an accident and the whole plane had burnt for hours? Paul Wellstone. Senator Paul Wellstone plane went veering off, highly experienced pilots that they took off from the airport in Minnesota, veered off for no apparent reason. There was no problem with the plane, no reported problem with the plane. Literally slammed into the ground, and that thing burnt for hours. They couldn't put the fire out.
No. By the way, the plane went through trees, and both wings were torn off of the plane, which is where the fuel tanks are. So the planes were torn off and left behind. The wings were torn off and left behind. The plane fuselage kept going and burned for hours. There was nothing left.
And the only type of fire that kind of would be like that would be like a thermite, some type of a thermite derivative or a thermite itself. Thermite will literally burn for hours, and it's almost impossible. You have to have like a specialized type of extinguisher to put out thermite. And if a fire department is going to a scene of a car accident, they're not going to have that type of, it's like a hazardous equipment. Because they do have them with every fire department. But when they're going to respond to a car fire, they're not going to respond to a thermite fire. They're responding to a car fire.
That's correct.
And you're sitting there for hours trying to put something out that doesn't even make physically sense what these people, how they got that car caught on fire.
No.
So the
Carvers are gone. They survived the massacre. We don't know what they saw, what they were telling their friends, but we certainly can legitimately postulate that their phones were being monitored ever since they got home, and people were listening to what they were saying and what they were planning on doing about it. We don't know, but they were being monitored. They're gone now, just like Michael Hastings had a huge story he was going to break about the Obama administration. He's gone now. That was 2013. 4 years ago, and he had a nearly brand new Mercedes. It wasn't a sedan, it was a sport model. Doesn't matter, because they're electronically all, as Gary said, hackable. They can be remotely taken over and controlled. Now, if this was the gate to the guarded community with the keypad, why would they run in to their own gate to their guarded community? You slow down, you go up, you punch the keypad, the gate opens, you go in. It makes no sense. The CHP said the car left the road, went into the gate, hit the keypad post and two brick pillars on either side of it. Makes no sense. None at all. All right. Now, so two gone there. Who else is gone? Remember Kimberly Sukumel, who went back to her home in Apple Valley, survived the shooting? I've got the write-up from her Facebook page. It is an extraordinarily detailed and compelling write-up. And she was going to organize all the victims and go after the people who were already starting to cover this thing up. She was furious. She went home back to Apple Valley. She had, I think, a three-year-old daughter. She and her husband went to bed. For the first time since she returned home, I guess it was 4, 5, 6 days after, he had to go to work at 4:30 a.m., so he left. And at 7:30, Grandma came to help babysit, and Mom was dead on the bedroom floor. What a coincidence. So there are three dead right there. Now, there is another story that just came out, which if you haven't been following this, you probably wouldn't have heard about it. And it has to do with another Las Vegas resident who went to the concert. He described also multiple shooters at the event. His name, Danny Contreras, an eyewitness to the Las Vegas massacre and shooting. He put a tweet out and he said, "Feeling lucky to be alive. Can't believe I got out of the concert alive. Two men chasing me with guns. Not everyone was so lucky." So he's saying there he saw two other shooters. Whether they were running after him or shooting after him, I think is not important. He was found dead. Well, tell our listeners where he was found, Gary.
He was basically found off Cary Avenue in Nellis, which is a kind of a drug addict area.
Empty house, vacant house.
Yeah, that's what they say. It's mainly mobile homes on their own property, on their own land. Basically, it's not a mobile home park. It's mobile homes where the property owner owns their own land.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of a real. It's a dark area. So if you wanted to basically get rid of, do something to somebody, that'd be the place. Because really, pretty much around that area is just them places, and you have, it's mainly a lot of industrial area around there, too. Older, lots, empty lots where people, they rent them out to, construction companies, that type of thing. And there's also a city sewage treatment plant out there, too, by the way. On that same area, Judson Avenue and that area out there. That's where it is. It was in the 5800 block of East Cary, which would put it actually in that area where I'm talking about. So if you know the area, if you go and if you ever go, if you drive down that area at night, it's pitch dark. There's very bad street lighting. So no one would have seen anything.
Reported any gunshots, which suggests potentially suppressed weapons used.
Or could have been just possibly dumped even over there.
Who knows?
It's hard to say.
He had multiple gunshots, and they made sure. Yeah.
And they're trying to say, well, it was a drug deal gone bad. Well, if a drug deal gone bad, you usually got a sketch. First of all, he would have been the one dealing because the drug addict, usually would be the one that tries to rob the drug dealer. So a drug addict ain't going to have suppressors. They're not going to be cautious and trying to, if he's trying to kill someone over a bad drug deal. These guys are just going to shoot. You're going to hear the guns go up, and these guys are going to take off on foot or whatever, how they do it. They're not going to be dealing in silence.
Right.
So they're trying to say it was just some drug deal gone bad. First they tried to tie in the gang ties, and that didn't work. So then the story was, now their best guess right now at this point is a drug deal gone bad. But again, like I said, if it was a drug deal gone bad, yourself, you would hear the gunshots, and it would be a commotion, one trying to rob the other, whatever they were trying to do. But there wasn't none of it. It was all silent. All they heard is, I guess, apparently one of the neighbors heard some moaning coming from the empty house.
Yeah, if you hear moaning, you can hear gunshots.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Now, there's the latest. Now, prior to that, according to another website up here, in addition to Danny Contreras, found dead in the vacant mobile home or manufactured home, there's another person. The guy who parked Stephen Paddock's car, the Mandalay Bay valet named Chad Nishimura. He went missing in the days following the shooting. After giving an interview to a Hawaiian mainstream TV station, KITV, Channel 4, in which he contradicted the official narrative and pointed out that Paddock didn't have many bags, certainly not enough to cart in 27 semi-automatic rifles, thousands of rounds of ammunition, and modifications going on the rifles, extras, additives, and so forth, up to the room. And Nishimura is gone. He's vanished. Gone. So
yeah,
there's
no
one another.
Can find him.
No.
And then you go, but if you do a YouTube search for Chad Nakashore.
Nishimura.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the only one that pops up on Google, which is they're great. They went on full scrub already. First one that pops up in the main thing, Snopes, says that's false. Of course, when you read the Snopes thing, they give no proof that he didn't
never
disappear.
Do.
They give no proof that he's around. And Snopes is just a ridiculous. That's just, I don't listen to anything.
No, Snopes is a government.
A
it always has been.
Yeah.
Well, what a wonderful way to control the narrative online or whatever you're trying to control. You set yourself up as the arbiter of what's real and what isn't. Now, there's another one, and I don't know this one. I hadn't heard about this, but this particular news site is claiming that somebody by the name of John Beilman, who was wanted by federal agents following the discovery of a communications device in the hotel room of the officially identified shooter, Stephen Paddock, allegedly killed both himself and his disabled daughter in an apparent murder-suicide. Now, that one I hadn't heard about, but there's a photograph of him here. I don't know. A key eyewitness in the Las Vegas mass shooting committed suicide and killed his daughter shortly after the FBI raided his home. Makes no sense. John Beilman was wanted by federal agents, as I said. I don't know. This is one I'm not familiar with, but it's too convenient. It's just too damn
convenient.
Yeah,
I've been trying to do a little research on that one, and I'm still trying to look up some more leads on that just to, you know, before you start, you know, you can make any comments on that. But if that's true, you know, again, that would be like the coincidences are this case. There's just the coincidences just keep rolling and rolling.
Oh, they're picking up speed. Hold on a minute, Gary, and I'll be right back. Much, much more ahead. So don't go away. Okay, we have a lot to do. Let me get right back to it. John Beilman, this is very interesting. It's October 8th, only a week after the massacre. Allegedly, his wife was in the house, didn't notice, wheeled his 12-year-old daughter out, she was in a wheelchair, severely disabled, into the backyard, shot her, and then shot himself in the back of his head with a 12-gauge shotgun. Now, that's what the story says. Again, I can't confirm any of this. However, the FBI raid on the house supposedly had to do with remember that cell phone charger in Paddock's room that had no accompanying phone? All right, well, that cell phone charger had SVR technology experts noting that that type of charger is used to charge a blah, 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 a non-rechargeable thin cell battery used in various communications devices by U.S. Special Forces and CIA forces. The company making this unique lithium battery is Ultralife Corporation, based in Newark, New York, that specializes in military communication systems for the Pentagon, and whose lead engineer for this particular communication systems development was John Beilman. All right, well, that's a weird one. I'll put this one up as well. I'm going to start a file on eyewitnesses to the event and others involved with it who have now, strangely, and in only 4 weeks, all died. We got Danny Contreras. We got Daniel and Lorraine Carver. Kimberly Sukumel. There's four. John Beilman. There's five. Then we've got the valet who has gone completely missing, Mr. Nishimura. There's six. All right, well, there's six right there. We won't find it. Nishimura's gone. He's gone. He contradicted the official story. What they're trying to do in killing these people off is take out the most dangerous people who saw too much. They're going to probably slack off and hope that these number of dead people, it'll be reported, they know, in the alternative media, which is what we're doing right now, will scare the others who saw too much and shut them up. They'll be taken out later on. But they're doing, I think this is strategic, what they're doing. I don't think there's any other way that I can logically view it. I may be wrong. I want you to get that straight, please. I don't have all the answers. I just have lots of questions. Anything to add, Gary?
Yeah, matter of fact, if you want, I will send you a link to this email, this article here in a few minutes from the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle. If you want to give a little bit of validity to the John Bielman story, this whole article is written by a guy named David Andriotta, and it was dated October 11th. There's no Las Vegas link to the Fairpoint murder-suicide. Okay, well, that's the headline of the article.
But oh, really? The article, so they're...
90%, yeah. Uh-huh. So, but listen to this. So three-quarters of the first 75% of the article is this author attacking right-wing, what they call alt-right sites, attacking conspiracy theorists, and nothing to do with the story about John Bielman at all. It's about, these are discredited sites, you shouldn't be getting your news from these type of sites. It's basically, it's an opinion piece.
So they're attacking the messenger, not the data.
So then at the very end, they said, well, by the way, yes, some of the story is true that they're reporting about John Bielman. Yes, he did work at that corporation that made these batteries. Yes, he was raided. But then they don't even give the reason why he was raided by the FBI anyway. They said it was a secret warrant. Secret warrant for what? They don't give you the reason why.
That's a good catch.
It's basically an opinion piece on attacking all these things. You just go down the whole story. And he's just trying to disprove everything and of course attacking the different sites and it's basically an attack piece. And then at the end, they tell a few tidbits of the story and that's it. And I know I'll send you a copy of this. I'll send you a link
to
the
I'm keeping a file on this. That's too many people. That's six people in 1 month, including his daughter would be seven, Bielman. What father's going to wheel his daughter out when he's got a mother there to take care of the child? The mother says she didn't even hear any shots. I'm sorry, that doesn't work for me. Something's wrong. I look forward to this story very much. Thank you. Okay, in the meantime, do keep in mind the Carvers in a Mercedes sedan. That's probably the pound for pound, the safest automobile on the road. Dennis and Lorraine Carver. I think I might have said Daniel, and I do apologize for that. All right. Here's another one, which you probably saw today, too. This is another review journal story from Las Vegas. Now, get this one. Remember when they went into the room, they put a charge on the door, allegedly blew open the doors, went in, and found Mr. Paddock dead. Shot apparently through the mouth. Although that's a matter of conjecture. He's laying on the floor. You know the story. You can see the photo analysis at Rents anytime you want. Look at it. Make up your own decision. No spent shell casings by the window that was blown out. The obvious implication was there was no firing there. All right, here you go. We got Bielman, something in that room that shouldn't have been there, a charger for a battery type that didn't belong to anything that Paddock owned. What's the deal? Here's the headline. Officer accidentally fired weapon in Las Vegas gunman's Mandalay Bay suite. What? How does a cop go into a suite and accidentally discharge his weapon? Now, that's a very interesting question. It's not rhetorical either. How does that happen? Was he that nervous? And it's not clear, did he fire it once or did he fire it twice? And how are we to know that he didn't execute Stephen Paddock? How are we to know this is not another piece of the puzzle that has been made up to try to answer questions that have no other answer? A Metropolitan Police Department officer accidentally discharged his weapon inside the Mandalay Bay gunman's suite the night of the October 1st mass shooting, the Clark County Sheriff confirmed today. The police firearm went off inside the suite sometime after officers made entry, the sheriff said. But the round, or rounds, were not fired in the same room where gunman Stephen Paddock was found dead with what had been described as a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Well, that would suggest that it was in the adjoining suite that he had rented under the name of Mary Lou Danley, who was never there. That's the adjoining door that was opened, and the other window was allegedly knocked out there to give a perspective and a good gunshot angle at the fuel tanks. But the fuel tanks were easily accessible from the first window that was knocked out, the one in the leaked pictures. It happened, and we're investigating it, just like we do with any officer-involved use of force, said Sheriff Joe Lombardo. Nobody was struck, said the sheriff. It's unclear what caused the officer in question, who has not been named, to discharge his weapon. The sheriff also confirmed Monday that the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Bay, where the gunman's corner suite was located, did not have security cameras facing the gunman's room or the stairwell door that Paddock had apparently sealed sometime before the mass shooting. The only cameras on the floor faced the elevators. So no fiber optic cameras at all on the floor to look to that end of the hall where the stairwell was and Paddock's suite. That says a lot right there, doesn't it? I don't think we have to think too much about that. FBI Las Vegas spokeswoman Sandra Breaux has reportedly declined to speak about the investigation. And I'm being facetious about no cameras, because they have cameras pointing in every direction down those halls. Why would you put in a fiber optic camera only to point one way and exclude you from being able to surveil a stairwell, which is a crucial part of every hallway in every building, and the end suite next to it? A little convenient, wouldn't you think? I don't know if you heard about this story or not, Gary. I just got it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did hear about that story. The other thing is they don't give an exact time he fired off the weapon. When did this weapon accidentally go off? Did it go off an hour into the investigation after they had encroached the room? Was it during the supposed firefight? Was it after? They don't give you any information. So, I mean, they could have been in that room for 2 hours gathering up forensic evidence, and he just accidentally fired off his weapon. You don't get that. You don't get the time of when he did it, even.
Says nothing, except there were a round or rounds fired in Paddock's suite by a cop. That's all it says.
So they don't give you a time. So
no time
frame.
We
have no clue. We don't know, was it before, after, when they were in the room? Was he just walking around the room and he just, and by the way, if it was after they found him dead, and why would he have his weapon pulled even?
His finger shouldn't have been nowhere near the weapon. If they find they clear the place, they secure it, Paddock's dead.
Yeah.
You don't pull your weapon out.
No. So why would he have his weapon pulled if that was the case? If Paddock's already dead, like you say, room secured, why would he have his weapon pulled? It makes no sense. And even that, like I said, but you're not going to get the real story, because the Review Journal article, the spokesman of the FBI was asked if there's going to be more press conferences and why there hasn't been any in a week or at the time this article was written. And the FBI spokeswoman, Sandra Breaux, said it doesn't matter. So basically they're saying it doesn't matter if we're having any press conferences or not. Basically what they're saying, it's under investigation. What we're doing right now is none of your business. That's what great. If you want to, decipher what she's trying to tell everybody, when she says it doesn't matter, what she's telling you is none of your business, and we will tell you what we want you to know when we want to. And that's it. If you take it or leave it or shove it, they don't care. I mean, what kind of a statement is that? Think about that. From an FBI spokeswoman, it doesn't matter. Well, I think it matters. You have 2 million people live in this valley, and you have other tourists coming here. You have millions of people that come here to visit. I think it matters to them. They want to know why their safety.
They want to know how secure they are.
Being trivialized.
That's right. So where we are right now is we have a dead alleged lone gunman. Nobody I know is buying into that. Who, by the way, allegedly shot himself through the mouth, through the head. And yet the sheriff was talking about his brain as if it was intact. We have sent his brain, not we have sent what's left of his brain. We have sent his brain for forensic analysis. When you shoot yourself through the mouth, it goes out the back of your head or the top of your head. And I can't tell by looking at the picture, and I frankly don't want to look at the picture, but I have. I can't tell where the bullet came out. I'm not convinced it didn't go through the back and come out the front. I don't know.
Well, definitely the assumption was that he put it in his mouth and he blew his head off. And that's what they even made that pretty much they insinuated that's what he did. If you remember right, a week after that, the Carr County the morgue at the Carr County Coroner's office said we did an autopsy on his brain and we found no abnormalities of the brain. And I said at the time, I said, well, how'd they do that if his brains were blown all over the room like they had claimed? How can you do an honest autopsy of a person's brain to see if there's any mental defects or any defections of the brain when it was blasted all over the room? Make no sense.
It would be full of gunpowder and agents of the gunpowder itself. It would be totally contaminated.
And then I think there was an article I just recently read where they said that his brain was going to be sent off to be...
They've sent it off
Some research thing, right. And then we're going to check it out to see.
A scientist is looking at it.
Yeah,
a scientist.
Las Vegas gunman Stephen Paddock's brain to be analyzed by scientists to find out some type of. They want to find out what made his brain tick. It's going to be looked under a microscope, and investigators will be looking for clues. Well, that's the only parts that are left, or maybe microscopic parts of the brain. But to do a whole brain, if you do any forensic show, so when they do a brain, let's put it this way: remember all these football players who had CTE and they went and killed their family, or they killed themselves, or they committed crimes and died or killed themselves? They took the whole brain and basically they sent it to a lab where they did research on it to see, what caused the brain, what was going on, if there was plaque, what was causing the dementia,
right,
and the pain, and the football players. Well, this guy here, there's not even enough brain matter left. If you're going to use a .38 revolver and blast your head off, there's not even enough brain matter left anyway. And by the matter of fact, the brain itself would be contaminated with the lead and the gunpowder from the actual firing of the bullet.
Right.
And you got to understand and think about when air hits the brain, the brain, when it dies, it, decomposition of a brain is actually pretty fast.
No,
so
it's,
they're collecting
it's,
samples off the floor yeah, of a carpet yeah. in a hotel.
Well, the initial
how much
yeah.
is left?
If there was if the initial autopsy had disclosed a tumor or some other abnormal tissue, they would have found that right away. Visual exams, it had to have microscopic exam. But we don't know what was left of his brain to begin with. That's never been discussed. And if you look at any forensic study of a suicide shooter with a pistol, especially a .38 special in the mouth, huge, enormous damage. The whole back of his head should have been off.
You got brain. You got brain matter mixed in with.
There's
with,
none on
with
the floor.
Bone.
There's none on the floor. There's blood. No. There's no brain matter. I see no evidence. I mean. I don't know.
So we don't
I just
even
know.
Don't know. We have no clue how he was really killed. I mean, he could have been strangled to death. He could have been poisoned. No one will know. We don't really know. There's so many questions, and as the questions get asked, the uglier the authorities get, the more cover up they try to pull. And again, it's like you remember how Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, the the Orlando shooting, it was weeks, and they were pushing, and it was just, they kept trying to upsell everything about that, them cases. The bombing, the Muslim side, you know, the terrorist aspect of it, the mental illness aspect of gun control. It was always something they were trying to upsell all them shootings. But this shooting, it's been basically talk for a few days about it, but now the mainstream media is just trying their damnedest just to make this thing go away. They don't care what they got to bring up. They got to bring up Harvey Weinstein, if it ain't Harvey Weinstein, but now it's child molesting. And then, let's put it this way. If this shooting, I've always believed this was a misdirect or a distraction. There's something bigger under that why this shooting had to happen. There's something bigger going on to misdirect the attention off whatever was going on. Because the fact of the matter is, they're even willing to have people go on and do mainstream media interviews where you have Corey Feldman saying, I am going to start naming the pedophiles that are in Hollywood. They're willing to even go that deep into the bag of information and to get people so distracted away from this shooting, they're willing to even name names of pedophiles in Hollywood. Think about that. Because these are secrets that have been held, and this, you understand, these secrets have been held for decades.
They say 100 years of Hollywood. It's always been that way.
Of Hollywood. And these are well-known secrets been kept. The media has never talked about it. And when you try to, the media would just insult the person trying to talk about it or attack the person. But now they're willing to talk about it. What does that tell you? Why is it they're trying to keep all eyes off this shooting so much? It's amazing that the amount of propaganda, the amount of basically erasing it off the front pages, not even putting it on the back pages at this point. They're basically just ignoring the story completely, hoping that the story will just go away out of people's memories, out of sight, out of mind. And man, you know, they're putting indictments up. They're just throwing everything, anything in this news cycle. They're just trying to keep changing
right.
the news cycle.
Anything but Las Vegas. I'm really, we've talked about this, Gary and I, at some length. There's something bigger and darker about this shooting that has scared a lot of people. And I would suggest that there may be rogue elements in this country's control mechanism that pulled this off, and the mainstreamers, the FBI, DHS, honestly didn't know it was coming. You know, any of these people who say, well, it was crisis actors, it was a drill, are they insane? Las Vegas would sue the federal government before they would ever allow any kind of a drill like this to occur in Las Vegas, because it would scare people. Stampede 22,000 people in a drill? Are you nuts? This is crazy. Then now they're offering weekday room rates, $29 in Las Vegas. And I've said before, they'll end up offering free airfare or vouchers or something like that. They got to get people back there.
You're going to see the meal comps ramp up. You're going to see all the usual, you know, to try the gimmicks. But the problem with the gimmicks are they're not going to work, because the fact of the matter is, you can all the gimmicks you want. They're not. They're trying. See, the whole thing about the gimmick is get people to town thinking they're going to gamble. But people don't have the disposable income anymore to be able to gamble. So no matter, you see, the casinos are in a hard spot. That's why that article I had sent you, they're charging locals now. They used to be, when they started charging for parking on the strip, they said, we're just going to charge tourists. That's what the announcement was about a year ago. Now, Caesars Properties is the first one that even locals now who go down the strip are going to be charged for the parking. And once Caesars does it, the way this is like a monkey see, monkey do town. One casino property does one thing, all the other ones follow suit. And it will follow. You're going to watch MGM do it. You're going to, matter of fact, I will guarantee you within a year, I will start seeing even the local casinos. And what I mean by the ones that just are here to serve local Las Vegas residents, the off-strip casinos, you're going to see them charging for parking. Hey, look, these guys, they're charging what they call the resort fee, like I was had told you about before.
Yeah.
They're casinos that aren't even near the strip, not even what they call the resort corridor, which is the strip. They call that the resort corridor. We're talking casinos that are like 10, 15 miles off the strip, charging resort fees. for what? You're not even near the Strip. You're on the other side of town. You're in North Las Vegas, and you're charging resort fees. And because they're doing that, because they're in a desperation mode, and you know they're not gonna put on the local media here how the casinos are in bad shape. The local media here ain't doing. They're basically PR men for the local casinos here. As you know yourself, the news in this town is to serve Las Vegas powerful interests.
Exactly.
And that's what they're here for. And you're not gonna get no story out of them.
Story at all.
If you're going to go to them and try to get any truth, good luck. That ain't going to happen.
No, I didn't. No. All right. Well, there you go. We've laid that out rather hurriedly, but I think you got the picture. And so the death list after the JFK murder, after Oklahoma City, remember? People die. Remember what happened to Boston bombing suspect's cousin? He was shot right through the top of the head by an FBI agent in his Florida apartment. So people that know things are being shut up. That's how it looks. If it's not that way, this is one astounding coincidence. Let's put it that way.
And you can guarantee one thing, Jeff, that you can guarantee that people also are going to have an uptick in gang stalking, too. A lot of people are going to start becoming victims of gang stalking. You watch.
I agree.
With this case.
We got 7 dead now, directly or indirectly connected to the October 1st massacre. Let's keep counting as they come in. We'll watch it for you. Thanks a lot, Gary.
All right. Have a good evening, Jeff.
All right. You too. All right. We'll be right back with Hour 3.